And the Lord sent Nathan unto David. And he came unto him and said unto him, There were two men in one city, the one rich and the other poor. The rich man had exceeding many flocks and herds. But the poor man had nothing save one little ewe lamb, which he had bought and nourished up, and it grew up together with him and with his children. It did eat of his own meat, and drank of his own cup, and lay in his bosom, and was unto him as a daughter. And there came a traveler unto the rich man, and he spared to take of his own flock and of his own herd, to dress for the wayfaring man that was come unto him, but took the poor man's lamb, and dressed it for the man that was come to him. And David's anger was greatly kindled against the man, and he said unto Nathan, As the Lord liveth, the man that hath done this thing shall surely die. And he shall restore the lamb fourfold, because he did this thing, and because he had no pity. And Nathan said to David, Thou art the man. Thus saith the Lord God of Israel, I anointed thee king over Israel, and I delivered thee out of the hand of Saul, and I gave thee thy master's house and thy master's wives into thy bosom, and I gave thee the house of Israel and of Judah. And if that had been too little, I would moreover have given unto thee such and such things. Wherefore hast thou despised the commandment of the Lord to do evil in his sight? Thou hast killed Uriah the Hittite with the sword, and hast taken his wife to be thy wife, and hast slain him with the sword of the children of Ammon. Now therefore, the sword shall never depart from thine house, because thou hast despised me, and hast taken the wife of Uriah the Hittite to be thy wife. Thus saith the Lord, Behold, I will raise up evil against thee out of thine own house, and I will take thy wives before thine eyes, and give them unto thy neighbor, and he shall lie with thy wives in the sight of the sun. For thou didst it secretly, but I will do this thing before all Israel and before the sun. And David said unto Nathan, I have sinned against the Lord. And Nathan said unto David, The Lord also hath put away thy sin. Thou shalt not die. Howbeit, because by this deed thou hast given great occasion to the enemies of the Lord to blaspheme, the child also that is born unto thee shall surely die. And Nathan departed unto his house, and the Lord struck the child that Uriah's wife bare unto David, and it was very sick. David therefore besought God for the child, and David fasted and went in and lay all night upon the earth. And the elders of his house arose and went to him to raise him up from the earth, but he would not, neither did he eat bread with them. And it came to pass on the seventh day that the child died, and the servants of David feared to tell him that the child was dead. For they said, Behold, while the child was yet alive, we spake unto him, and he would not hearken unto our voice. How will he then vex himself if we tell him that the child is dead? But when David saw that his servants whispered, David perceived that the child was dead. Therefore David said unto his servants, Is the child dead? And they said, He is dead. Then David arose from the earth and washed and anointed himself and changed his apparel and came into the house of the Lord and worshipped. Then he came to his own house, and when he required, they set bread before him, and he did eat. Then said his servants unto him, What thing is this that thou hast done? Thou didst fast and weep for the child while it was alive, but when the child was dead, thou didst rise and eat bread. And he said, While the child was yet alive, I fasted and wept, for I said, Who can tell whether God will be gracious to me that the child may live? But now he is dead. Wherefore should I fast? Can I bring him back again? I shall go to him, but he shall not return to me. And David comforted Bathsheba his wife, and went in unto her and lay with her, and she bare a son, and he called his name Solomon. And the Lord loved him. And he sent by the hand of Nathan the prophet, and he called his name Jedidah, because of the Lord. And Joab fought against Rabbah of the children of Ammon and took the royal city. And Joab sent messengers to David and said, I have fought against Rabbah of the children of Ammon, and he took the royal city. And Joab sent messengers to David and said, I have fought against Rabbah and have taken the city of waters. Now therefore gather the rest of the people together and encamp against the city and take it, lest I take the city and it be called after my name. And David gathered all the people together and went to Rabbah and fought against it and took it. And he took their king's crown from off his head, the weight whereof was a talent of gold with the precious stones, and it was set on David's head. And he brought forth the spoil of the city in great abundance, and he brought forth the people that were therein, and put them under saws, and under harrows of iron, and under axes of iron, and made them pass through the brick kiln. Thus did he unto all the cities of the children of Ammon. So David and all the people returned unto Jerusalem. May God add his blessing to the reading and to the hearing of his most holy word. There are some subtle things in this passage that we often overlook. I want to make sure we hit those. I don't want to take a lot of time. We do have circumcision to talk about this afternoon, but I do want to do this passage an amount of justice. So Nathan comes to David, and he tells him a little story about a man, a poor man, and a ewe lamb. And the little ewe lamb is like a daughter to this poor man, and the rich man that lives nearby has all that he needs. And a stranger comes and lodges with the rich man, and although the rich man has all kinds of things, all kinds of means of his own herds and flocks wherewith to feed this wayfaring man, he does not. Instead, he goes to his next door neighbor and takes that ewe lamb and dresses it for the wayfaring man. And that's the end of the parable. That's all that Nathan says. Now notice the anger of David. Notice how angry David is. Oh, the anger of the king was kindled when he heard that there might be a man in his kingdom that would do something like that. And so he rises up as the judge, and he says, surely the man that did this shall die. He's going to die. And also, before he dies, he'll restore fourfold to the man that he took this little ewe lamb from, the ewe lamb of his bosom, if you will. Well, what do you see here? Do you see a man who is as yet unconvicted by his sins? Do you see a man as yet who is still indignant at sin, even though it's residing in his own bosom? He has so fully put it out of his mind, perhaps, that he rises up indignant. Or perhaps this is pretense. Perhaps it's simply feigned anger. Or perhaps it's the anger of projection. The guilt that he's feeling causes him to be so very angry that someone in his kingdom would do such a thing as that. Either way, it's clear that David is out of sorts. For taking a ewe lamb was not indeed punishable by death. It was punishable by restoration, but not punishable by death. And so David overreacts for one reason or another. Perhaps his guilt has been striking at him. Perhaps that phrase of Psalm 32 is coming to roost here, and we see that David has been put to the worst by God's hand weighing heavy upon him day by day and night by night, and the guilt that he is feeling and cannot escape because he has not confessed his sins, that is coming home to roost, and now he's simply gone into being a rapacious tyrant. Of course, then Nathan utters those famous words, Thou art the man. Thou art the man that has taken the little ewe lamb. Thou art the man that has taken that which was so dear to thy honorable neighbor. And so then Nathan goes on to talk about all that the Lord had done for David. Notice what a kingdom I've given you. Notice what a family I've given you. Notice what a house I've given you. Notice all the wives that I've given you. And if you thought you lacked anything else, you could have asked and I would have given you such and such things, as much as you asked. But no, you wouldn't be content with that. You had to have something that wasn't yours. And so we find out here that there is no amount of stuff that keeps you from coveting. Coveting is a heart sin, and it's from top to bottom. The richest and the poorest suffer from that sin. Doesn't matter how much you have, but it doesn't matter how little you have. Covetousness knows no economic boundaries. I remember I was talking to a good friend of mine, and he was talking about some property that he bought. And he said, you know, the day I bought that property, and I had all kinds of acres, I went out to that property, and I stood at the fence, and I looked over at my neighbor's yard. And all this fence, all this land, all this property, a pond, woods, everything, and the first thing I did was I went over to the fence and looked over at my neighbor. What's he got over there? What's he got over there? Yeah, that's the kind of people that we are, isn't it? David had so very much. He had so very much. And yet, in the final analysis, to a covetous heart, wasn't enough. It never will be. It never will be until we learn to be content with such things as we have. So then, David says, I have sinned. And I believe it's a sincere admission of sin. It's probably by this point in David's life a relief. It's probably a relief. He has been beset by the Lord, no doubt, in his conscience, in his soul, for quite some time now. And so no doubt it's a relief to David, finally, to confess and forsake that sin. Notice he says, I have sinned. Now what was the first pronouncement out of David's mouth? Whoever did this thing, he shall die. What did Nathan respond to him? Those other famous words. The Lord hath put away thy sin. Thou shalt not die. Do you realize that the wages of sin is death? Do you understand that? Do you understand that the wages of sin is death? That's really what we deserve? David thought he deserved somebody else's wife. Really what he deserved was to die. And what does Nathan say to David? The Lord hath put away thy sin. Sweeter words were never heard to anyone's ears. The Lord hath put away thy sin. Thou shalt not die. Brothers and sisters, the wages of sin is still death. Still today. It's still death. The first word spoken to our parents in the garden. Of all of the trees of the garden thou mayest freely eat. But of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, thou shalt not eat of it, for in the day that thou eatest thereof, thou shalt surely die. To our first parents were these words spoken. The Apostle Paul, some perhaps 4,000 years later, said, the wages of sin is death. But brothers and sisters, to those who believe in Christ, the Lord hath put away thy sin. Thou shalt not. Warmer, more dear words have never been spoken. We deserve to die. We deserve death. And then hellfire. That's what we deserve. Do you think of that? Do you think on that? Do you meditate about what you really deserve? Do you think on the depth of the mercy of God in that you really deserve to die? And then to be judged forever. That's what we deserve. But in Christ, the Lord hath put away thy sin. Thou shalt not die. So then, we realize, though, that although that the Lord had put away David's sin, and he had put it away, there were still consequences to be paid, still chastisements to be borne, still the way of sanctification for David was that there would be much grief. This is a train wreck in David's house. Because he killed Uriah with the sword of the Ammonites, the Lord tells him, the sword will never depart from your house. Your house will be a wreck. There will be infighting and only a passing glance at the next chapters in 2 Samuel will reveal the difficulty in David's house, and what a grief it must have been to him to have a house in such disarray and sin and disorganization and backbiting and murder in his own house. But I want to go on. I want to show you a couple of the subtleties in this passage. It's very, very interesting. I'm not sure how many people have picked it up. I didn't have a chance to read a whole bunch of commentaries. I didn't take the opportunity. Let me say it that way. Didn't have a chance is a bad way of speaking, and I apologize. I didn't take the opportunity to read a lot of commentaries on this passage this week. So I don't know how many guys are really getting it right, but I don't know if you noticed it or not. But what day did the child die? The child died on the seventh day. Now, had the child lived to the eighth day, what would have happened? He would have been circumcised. You see, the child died before he was circumcised. Now, what does that mean? What does that mean to David? What does that mean to the people around him? Well, it may have meant something, but David takes all of that away. He mourns and he fasts for the child while it is yet alive, but it dies on the seventh day. They come to David, now notice, and they say, "What are you doing? How come you're not fasting now? How come you've dressed yourself up and you're eating now that the child has died? We'd think you'd be mourning even sorer now." He says, "No. No, I besought the Lord. I brought my case to him while the child was alive. Perhaps he'll be gracious." Even though the Lord had said, the child will die, David petitions the Lord. Because you know why? David knows, even though this is anachronistic, and I understand that, that means children, that means it's out of order chronologically. Even though this is anachronistic, David knows the principle of a moral interpretation of prophecy. There is such a thing as the moral interpretation of prophecy found in Jeremiah 18. Verses 18 and following, I believe, where Jeremiah says this. He says, "At what instant I shall speak concerning a nation to build up and to plant? If that nation turns away from me, I won't plant them. I'll tear them down. Even though I said I would plant them. But if they turn away from me, I will not." But then the other side of that. "If at what instant I speak concerning a nation to pluck up and to tear down, if that nation turns to me," what does the Lord say? "Then I will turn to them." And so, even though the Lord had said the child will die, David knew the moral interpretation of prophecy. Perhaps that was a way that the Lord would continue to sanctify David. And so he prostrates himself before him for a week, praying for the child. Who knows whether or not the Lord would be gracious? David didn't know. And so he set himself to the best that he could do for the child's life. Now that's amazing. But then what's interesting beyond that is the lack of superstitious attachment to the sign of the covenant that we see so often today that is, in my mind, sickening in Reformed circles. Because the child dies on the seventh day, and yet David says, "I'll go to him. He won't return to me." How wonderful it is that David was not superstitiously attached to the sign of the covenant. But he understood that the sign of the covenant is just that. It's a sign. It's not operating ex opere operato. It doesn't operate in the working of it. The other subtlety of this passage that I think is... Well, I almost wept when I read it. I don't know if some of you heard my voice break or not, but I almost wept when I read it. Because when David goes on, he comforts his wife. And the Lord is kind to them and grants them a son. And David, in testimony of his forgiveness, names his son what? Peace. Peace. He names him Peace. The Lord had taken away the first son of him and Bathsheba, but he gives him another one. And in testimony that David's sin has been put away, that he is at peace with God, he names his son Shlomo, the peaceful. You see, these are these little subtleties in the Hebrew that when we drill down and find them, they're just so effective. So David is at peace with God, as witnessed by the name of his new son. All right, thus ends the reading. Let's stand and call upon the Lord in the singing of